Start hour number three by talking to a senior writer for Golf Magazine, a columnist for Golf.com, the author of six books all over the U.S. Open. Alan Shipnuck is my guest. Alan, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing well, Romy. How are you?
Good, bud. Good. Now, you were in the tap room at 1 a.m. this morning. Let me start right there. What was that scene like?
Well, it was great. You know, the tap room is the hub of the Pebble Beach Resorts generally. It's where all the golfers go to hang out during everyday play and certainly during the U.S. Open. This week it was closed to the public. It was really off limits to reporters. But I used to work at Pebble Beach when I was in college as a cart boy, and I still know a few people. So my colleague Michael Bamberger and I sneaked in to have a late meal, and we're actually going to tape a podcast in there. But it was so loud and raucous. We got seated at a table right next to Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and their people. And not long after, Gary Woodland rolled in with the trophy and his entourage. And he's drinking out of the trophy. He's passing it around. Spieth is throwing spitballs across the room. Various Fox sports talent stopped by, guys like Brad Faxon and Joe Buck and some USGA officials. It was really kind of clubby and cool, and it was a great way to just kind of put a bow on the week. And it was interesting too to see Woodland in that environment. I mean, you could just see the tension come off of him. I think the drinks had something to do with it, but also the camaraderie with the other players. You know, of course, Spieth and Thomas have each won majors, and so they were welcoming him to the club. You know, very exclusive club in golf. So, yeah, it was a fun deal for sure.
That is really, really cool. Alan Shipnuck is joining us. You know, before we talk about the details of the tournament itself, what is the experience of a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach like?
Well, it's in some ways it's the grandest stage in golf. We know about the beauty, and there's such a rich history there with the previous Opens. And there's the holes are just so dramatic, the shots you're required to hit, the various questions that the course asks of the players, and there's an elegance and a stateliness to the surroundings with the lodge and where the putting green is tucked in right there, and everything about it just feels right, looks good, and you know it's kind of a it's a quintessential open venue. The people here are hardcore golf fans because of course we get the Crosby Clambake every year, and so they know the players. There's a lot of relationships that have been formed through the years. You know, most of the players stay in private housing this week because they've broed up with Pebble Beach folks over time. I went out and played Cypress Point on Monday, and a bunch of the players are there hanging out. It's a special kind of week. It's a different feel, and partly because you know Pebble Beach belongs to all of us, right? It's a public venue, so many of the people in the crowd have played the course, and they have their little stories about the chip they had on the 17th hole. And you're not going to get that at Oakmont or Wingfoot or those ultra-exclusive venues. And so there's just a special feeling in the air all week long.
Alan Shipnuck joining us. He's a senior writer for Golf Magazine, also a columnist for Golf.com. So, Alan, Brooks Koepka comes out on fire yesterday. He had birdies on four of the first five holes. When you saw him start like that, what did you expect the outcome would be like at the end of the day?
Yeah, it was hard not to have this feeling like, here we go again. I mean, Brooks has just become a monster, and he has created an aura that you can feel out there. The players, they know that when he's on the board, he's not gonna go anywhere. And he was, of course, the first seven holes of Pebble often are where you can do your scoring, but Brooks was playing spectacular golf, and he was strutting around like only he can. And you could see that Justin Rose was fighting a swing, and it was sort of predictable at some point it was going to betray him. Then it really came down to if Gary Woodland could hit the shots and hold his nerve, you know, with Brooks breathing down his neck. And those two guys are similar personalities, the similar builds. They play the game the same way. But, you know, and Woodland comes into the final round 0-for-7 and closing out 54-hole leads on the PGA Tour. The mental side of the game had escaped him to this point, and how to think his way around and how to stay cool under pressure and not to get those adrenaline surges that he had growing up playing basketball and baseball. And, you know, Brooks has made an art form of all those things. He's just so relaxed out there and so comfortable. And so that was really the tension that was built into the back nine. What was Woodland going to crack? Because you knew Brooks wasn't. And ultimately, you know, Woodland hit the shots he needed to do, couldn't make a putt when he had to, and he was a very, you know, Gary Woodland was a very deserving champ. But, you know, all credit to Koepka, he just came strong as he always does. I mean, it's three majors in a row that he was right there till the bitter end, and there's nothing to indicate that's not going to be the case for a very long time.
Alan Chipnook joining us. You know, Alan, just to finish that thought, and I appreciate the way you set that up, but you made the point before yesterday that it was kind of a mystery on tour as to why Woodland had only won three times. What was his reputation as both a player and a person?
Well, he's a beloved guy. He's a nice Midwestern boy who everyone likes, and just good people, you know. So people, he's easy to root for, and he's very popular on tour. Of course, a lot of people know now that 2 years ago he had a tragedy with his wife. She was pregnant with twins. One of them miscarried. The other was born very premature, but is now doing great. But, you know, it's a fraternity out there, and everyone kind of rallied around Woodland after that. And so it was a popular win in the locker room, in the caddy yard, in the press tent. But as for why it took so long, I mean, that's the mystery of sports, right? Gary Woodland has all the tools. But he just hadn't quite figured it out yet. And he started working with a new swing coach, a guy named Pete Cowan. He's kind of the Euro Tour whisperer, and he's really helped Woodland upgrade his short game. And I think he just taught him a little bit about how to play the game and how to think his way around out there. And you could just see the comfort level that Woodland had the whole way through. And, of course, he hit the two shots of the tournament. There was that full-blooded three-wood on the 14th hole, 265 up the hill. I mean, there's only a handful of guys on tour who can hit that shot. I mean, that was a testament to his strength, but also his confidence and that killer instinct you need to have to close the tournaments out. I think in the past he might have backed off and laid up and played for a C5, but in this case he went for it and he pulled it off. And then, of course, we saw that super delicate pitch on 17. That took a lot of nerve. It took a lot of technique. And he may have had the nerve before, but he didn't have the technique. And so you know, you put his power with a better short game and a more reliable putting stroke, and then you mix in some self-belief, and it's a pretty potent combination.
Alan Chipnook, my guest. So what about that? When you take those three shots, right, you've got the three-wood on 14, you've got the chip on 17, you've got the putt on 18. When you see those three shots and you see the way he closed out the U.S. Open, does that feel like something he can build on?
Oh, absolutely. It was important for the tournament as a whole, too, because it turned into a kind of a sleepy back nine where everyone was just hanging on, and you want a defining moment. You know, we had Nicklaus's one iron in 72 at Pebble Beach. We had Watson's chip in, we had Tom Kite's chip in on number seven. You know, in 92, there's a long history on this great stage of players doing something really dramatic when it matters. And so it was nice that Woodland continued that. And, you know, he has twins on the way again in August, and so his life is going to change in a big way. And you see this with a lot of guys when they win their first major championship, and all of a sudden there's money on the table for endorsements and to play around the world, and it's very easy to get distracted. You add in a couple, you know, how much that family life is going to change. I mean, let's hope that Gary Woodland can honor his gift. I mean, he has a chance to be a real force in this game, and he still lives in Kansas City. I mean, he's not a bright light, big city kind of dude. I think he'll do a good job of staying focused on what really matters. And you know, he's not a kid. He's 35. I mean, he doesn't have an endless future like a Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth. I mean, he's got to make hay now. And so I think he will. I mean, I think he's going to be a force on the U.S. Ryder Cup team, and I think he'll be a consistent contender at these majors. And it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, he's just another strong American player like a Dustin Johnson, like a Brooks Koepka. And you throw him in the mix at these majors, it could be a lot of fun.
Alan Chipnook, my guest. Alan, one more topic before you go, and I appreciate the time. Then you have Phil Mickelson, right? And every time you get to a U.S. Open, there's that talk of him finally getting it, but he ended up in 52nd place. When you consider that he celebrated his 49th birthday yesterday, it would appear that time has run out on him, it would seem. If his career were to end without winning a U.S. Open, how much of that is a reflection of his game, and how much of that is a reflection of how much the USGA and the pressure of a U.S. Open got into his head, perhaps?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter. I mean, Phil's one of the most talented players ever to peg it. And the fact that he's had six chances to win the Open, it tells you, even with his reputation as being a little wild off the tee, he had the game to win it. But the U.S. Open is designed to push the players to the breaking point, you know, spiritually and mentally. And Phil snapped more than a few times. And he's not unlike Sam Snead, you know, one of the all-time great players who never won a U.S. Open. There's some guys who just don't have the fortitude. They don't have the ability to think clearly. They can't handle the stress of the Open. I mean, Phil's more of an Augusta National guy, right? He's freewheeling. It's this vast canvas where he can express his artistic side. That's not U.S. Open golf. I mean, it's an oppressive, claustrophobic test, and Phil's just failed it over and over. It's highlighted some of the problems with his ability to find the fairway. You know, you think about Wingfoot in 06. He had two fairways on Sunday. It was a miracle he even had a chance to blow that in the last hole. You know, that was a technical breakdown, but there's been a lot of other times when he just lost his head, as they say. And it's always going to be part of Phil's legacy that he couldn't get it done. I mean, for a guy to have that much game, to be such a prolific winner, week in and week out, to win all the other majors, if he couldn't do it at our national championship, it tells you something about Phil. I mean, when all is said and done, he's going to be one of the most popular players ever. He's already in the Hall of Fame. He's got more money than God. I mean, no one's playing any violins for Phil Mickelson, but it's certainly going to be part of his enduring legacy that he couldn't get it done at the tournament that means the most to him.
I think you're right. That's fair. One last thought. Rory McIlroy came in, Alan, on a roll. He finished tied for ninth, which is a nice enough showing, but it could have been so much better. What do you make of his week?
Just the classic backdoor top 10 for Rory. I mean,
right.
He's the master at it in the majors the last 5 years. You know, most disappointing was he was on the fringe of contention. He had a chance to go out early, post a number, and put the pressure on the leaders, and just makes an awful double bogey on the second hole, and it's like you could just see all the air come out of Rory's U.S. Open week, and he made a bunch of birdies in the middle of the round, and made another double bogey on the 16th hole. It's just, you know, Rory's won a U.S. Open, but that week at Congressional, I mean, it really played like a tour event. It was so soft and wet, and he could just smash driver, and there was no fire in the golf course. And it still counts. I'm not taking away from it, but it was a different kind of test, which he passed. And in general, there's a lot of Phil in Rory. He's just a freewheeling momentum player. And, you know, we've seen him shoot 61 to win some tournaments on Sunday. When he gets it going, it's awe-inspiring. But that's not U.S. Open golf, where you just have to grind it out and you're fighting for par and you have to leave the driver in their bag a lot of times, which certainly takes away some of Rory's advantage. And so it was a bummer because all year long, Rory's been playing at an extremely high level. If you look at all the stats, he's near the top and most of the important ones. And, of course, he's won twice. And right now he's in the conversation for player of the year, but he just can't quite get it done at the majors, and that the reason they're so revered as tests is because they're the most exacting, they're the toughest to win, and they point out the holes in players' games, and right now Rory is just struggling with a few things when it really matters.
He is a senior writer for Golf Magazine, a columnist for Golf.com, the author of 6 books, and that is a great conversation. Alan Shipnook, and he was in the tap room at 1 o'clock in the morning. Alan, great job, man. Appreciate you. That was fun. Really good job.
All right. Thanks for having me. See you, Jim.
Talk to you soon. He didn't hold back at all, did he? Love that. That's a really good conversation. Alan Shipnook.